You are listening to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast, a podcast where I interview guests about D&D, miniatures, wargaming, comic books, movies, game conventions, and other nerd-related paraphernalia. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast. Now, some of you may be familiar with a fantastic gaming convention that rolls around in early November in Madison, Wisconsin, and is host to an incredible list of guests and gamers. Well, if you read the blog, you'll already know that I've been praising this convention ever since I wandered into the front door of the Sheraton Hotel back in the year of our Lord, 2013. This gaming convention is known as GameholeCon. For the past 2 years, GameholeCon has brought together the eldritch lords of D&D to run games and disseminate gamer lore. It is a convention where one can play a game run by the likes of David Zeb Cook, Ed Greenwood, or even one of the Sons of Gygax. I have with me on the show today the High Lord Regent of GameholeCon, the man who decided that the fun he was having with his gaming crew should be opened up to the rest of the world. A visionary among gamers, he is Alex Kammer. Welcome to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast, Alex.
Well, I really appreciate it. That's quite an introduction, and I thank you for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the Game Hole is a real place. It exists in an undisclosed location in somewhere in Wisconsin. We all know this. But I want to know, first of all, how did you come up with the idea that you're playing with your buddies in the Game Hole and think, you know, I should just start a convention because I have so much extra time on my hands? And
yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. The Game Hole is a gaming group that's been around in the Madison area for a long time that I'm part of. And we've been playing together for years, having fun, playing mostly RPGs, but a lot of board games too. And it's called the Game Hole because it used to be located in my basement. So our gathering space was subterranean. So Game Hole seemed appropriate.
Sure.
That's the reason for the odd name. But why and how we got started on this madness, what happened was there was a new game store opened in our area, and they were looking for people to start running games there just to get gamers into the store. And so we started running a once-a-month games day, and we were just running games for people, and, you know, we'd run different things. And we had so much fun doing it, and it was so successful, we thought, you know, gosh, it's a big step from here to run a convention, but we've always been sort of kicking around. Would it be funny to do or fun to run a convention called GameholeCon and get all our friends to come? And, you know, and once we started getting into it, and my game group, the people that are part of it and the guys who run GameholeCon are all pretty serious about all the endeavors that I and they take on. Once we've got going, we decided, hey, let's not hit short. Mm-hmm. If we're going to do this, let's do it right. Let's try to make this a national convention. And one that sort of explodes on the scene, and people say, wow, where did this GameholeCon come from? That was a reaction we wanted. I think so far so good.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly the reaction. And I could tell from the, you know, attending in 2013 to 2014, the explosion in numbers that came to the second year of GameholeCon. Right. And now because word got out from GameholeCon 2013 on how much fun it was. And I do like the odd name because it shows that this is a convention that was created from, you know, the heart. Like, you didn't think of MadCon is a cool name for a convention, but it's obviously Madison, Wisconsin convention. And this is, here's a specific word and we're going to make a convention out of it. And come if you want or don't, but don't worry about the name.
That's exactly right. If we were going to, you know, if you went to a marketing type and said, hey, I want to build a successful event, you know, what do you think for names? What do you think about GameholeCon? They would have laughed and said, why don't you, you know, you guys are game nerds. Why don't you do something like, you know, Fiery Dragon Con or,
right,
you know, whatever, something that would get nerds excited. So we just, because we're not interested in trying to make money, quite frankly, we're just trying to have fun and build a big, awesome celebratory convention. Mm-hmm. We didn't, you know, you're absolutely right. If the name offends, or if you don't like the way it sounds, you know, that's cool. The reaction has been overwhelmingly positive, and I think people dig that it's unique and it's really us, and it's not some, you know, bunch of corporate phonies or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. It's your gaming crew running the convention.
Yep.
Right. So you talked them into that, which is amazing, because it's a big convention. It's got to be a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, we did. We consciously decided to skip the small convention startup. You know, usually what happens with these things, they start with by being glorified games days where you have 50, 60, 70, 80 people, and it slowly grows. I mean, year one, we had almost 500 attendees, and that's because we worked hard to promote it. And also we had got the system in place. We got, our graphics, everything. So it looked like, you know, it was a major convention to start, and it worked. It's been a blast, a lot of work, but it was so much fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. Are there for 2015, you know, you're moving from the Sheraton Hotel to the Alliant Energy Center, a much larger space. And I'm wondering, are there any lessons you learned over running the last 2 years? Like what things have you noticed that you didn't expect at all to be an issue or something with the convention that you're like, we really need a lot more space for this? And
yeah. Well, just like any complicated endeavor, preparation is the key. You know, the more you prepare and the more work you put on the front end, the better the product is, and whatever that is. And the same thing with the convention. So we worked really hard to try to, you know, see and visualize where choke points would be, where we'd have difficulties, where we'd have, you know, whatever be manpower shortages or space shortages. And despite that, they still come up. You know, for example, we have a real broad type of array of games, you know, RPGs, card games, miniature games, and board games. If you just consider the variety in any one of those categories and consider the table needs for those games, you know, that alone is a tremendously complicated logistical challenge to make sure that you have the right size round for this game, the right size squares for this game, the right size rectangles for that game, and, you know, get it all laid out. And we found quickly that the hotel, while they did a great job, the Sheraton, Madison Sheraton did a great job, they're used to putting on weddings and banquets. They don't have, you know, just endless variety of all these different size tables. So that was one challenge. And the other was the big one with the Sheraton, well, just overall space, you know, that became a problem year two, but certainly parking. Parking was a big problem. They're not used to having 1,000 people at their hotel at once. That's just not what they do. There are very few hotels in the country that can do that. So factors like that made our move to the Alliant Energy Center, which is right across the street, more or less, really, it was such a strong indicator that we should do that. And then, you know, because the hotel support is around there are four hotels right around the Alliant Energy Center with essentially unlimited parking and room to grow. It was a scary decision. Now that we're a few months into it and we're staring at a November convention date, I am so glad that we did, because the things that we have planned for this year and already the growth that we're seeing from in terms of just our game submissions, the people who are submitting games to us right in that phase now, people who want to run games.
Yep.
I mean, the richness and the variety and sheer numbers of the games is just awesome. And I am so glad that we don't have to, oh my gosh, we can't approve this game because we don't have space to put it on. It's sure. Really nice.
Yeah. With the first game, Hokan, like you said, you did all the legwork beforehand to make it a extremely legit, huge convention. And you got some really impressive guests for the first one. I mean, including besides the guys that go to GaryCon, and I want to ask you about GaryCon as well. I'm sure that was a little inspiration there too.
Mm-hmm.
But also like Jen Page, the Dungeon Bastard, these kind of characters coming down for the first Gamehole Con. How did you go about deciding who to invite, getting them to come to the convention?
Well, let's see. As far as deciding who to invite, and the same process is the answer to almost every question about why does blank exist at GameholeCon. The reason is we thought, what kind of convention would we like to go to? What kind of guests would we like to be able to meet there and hang out with? What kind of games would we like to play? How would we like the process to go? How would we like registration to go? How do we like the staff to treat us? All that stuff is what would we want to experience? Because we love conventions. You know, you mentioned GaryCon. We go to Gen Con, GaryCon, North Texas RPG, a myriad of other conventions because we really like convention gaming. So all of those experiences, you know, over the years has sort of informed us as to what we want, how we see the perfect convention going off. So once we started with our original guess of, you know, some of the legends of Dungeons and Dragons who happen to live in Wisconsin, like Ernie Gygax, Frank Menzner, Tom Wham, and Jim Ward, then we started thinking, well, who else? That sort of, you know, addresses the grognard old school D&D players. But we're not that convention. We're not going to be just a D&D RPG convention. We want, you know, board gamers and miniatures and card games and so on. So we started to broaden, you know, who else do we like? Well, I mean, the Dungeon Bastard is awesome. He's super funny.
Yeah.
And he's a great, great DM. So we thought, well, what the hell? Let's invite him. Jen Page, just because she seemed like a real cool girl. None of us knew her. I just reached out to her and talked to her a little bit. And she was at first, you know, wondering who we are and what we wanted. And yeah. then after some conversations, she said, what the hell? I'll try it. And she was, in retrospect, because we've gotten to know Jen quite well now over the years, she, it turns out, was quite flattered by the fact that we wanted her to come and run games, not just be a cosplayer sort of, you know, I don't know what the proper term would be, but just sort of to be seen, you know, and yeah. not, we wanted her to run games just like Frank Menzner runs games. And she thought that was really cool. And that was the first time she'd ever been asked, which is amazing to me. You know, she's such a stalwart at conventions that no one's ever asked her to run a game before.
Yeah. And so, I actually played in her Call of Cthulhu game and it was fantastic. She was great.
That's cool. I didn't, you know, that's awesome because I actually have not had a chance to speak to anyone who played in one of her games.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I always try to get into the Call of Cthulhu games at Gen Con and couldn't. And so at Gamehole Con, I was like, oh, Call of Cthulhu game, signed up for it. I'm like, wait, this is run by Jen Page? Like, it was on the special guest list. And I was,
yeah. Well,
it was awesome.
You are going to be, if you are a Call of Cthulhu fan, we have a ton this year. We've got this group out of Chicago who is one of the big groups that runs games at Gen Con, you know, the kind of games you can never get into that sell out in like 15 seconds. Well, they have a dedicated hall basically where they're going to be running Call of Cthulhu rounds the entire convention in addition to a ton of other Call of Cthulhu because we love it too. It's such a great convention game. And then speaking of Jen Page, it's official as of today that she's coming back this year, which is we're really excited about.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's a scoop for you.
That is a scoop. Jen Page is going to be at Gamehole Con 2015.
Yep.
She's
yep,
back. Yep. That is fantastic. And the Call of Cthulhu games, they sell out in like reverse time when it's just – You can't possibly get into them, it seems like. I don't know who does, but...
I don't know either because, you know, we just went through Gen Con game selection last weekend, I think, and I had, I think, four Call of Cthulhu games that I wanted to get into all sold out, so I got in some other good games, but that's the thing about Gen Con. It just is... I don't know. I haven't figured out what the hack is yet, but I don't know what it is. I mean, I got some things that I wanted, but a lot of things that I wanted I didn't get, and, you know, so it goes.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's like the like Wall Street, where you have to buy a building next to the, you know, where Wall Street is, so your server is so close when you get online, like that half a millisecond, you know, improves your chances of making a trade.
You know, you may have a point there because I have a friend of mine in Indianapolis, and whereas I jumped in immediately and my number in line was 4,800, his was just under 1,000. So that you're probably onto something there.
Just like that, it's kind of IP spread out from wherever they're receiving those requests.
And you know, and we love Gen Con, but it's just so big, and such a trade show that you just get lost there. And so what we're trying to do. And Peter Atkinson, by the way, who's the owner of Gen Con, is going to be one of our guests too this year. He's heard about us and wants to come check out our con, which is incredibly flattering.
Holy cow.
So what we want to do is give everyone the experience that is the best part of Gen Con without all the other stuff we're talking about. So for example, a dealer hall, everyone loves, and I'm one of them, love the dealer hall at Gen Con. It's just massive. It's just such a great toy land for nerds.
Yeah, it is.
You know, do we have one that large? No. But we do have the largest dealer hall second to Gen Con in all Midwestern cons. We have a 6,500 square foot dealer hall that will have, I think, 34 vendors and 7 artists. So you should be able to find lots of cool stuff at our convention. You know, again, so you can have a fun, whatever, retail shopping thing if you want to do that. We have this year that's new, we have a big lobby. Because this is a proper convention center. So in there, we have lots of stuff going on. The first one will be some people vending food there. There'll be tables, dedicated tables for game demos that different companies are signing up for, to just free demos for people to come and stop in and check out their games. We're also going to have a stage where there's going to be a good amount of live music being played. I mean, we're trying to make this really a nutty carnival festival kind of thing. And that's going to be really cool. It's a little nerve wracking to see how it all goes off. But, you know, we're trying to schedule it all. And I think it's going to make sense and be fun.
Yeah. I mean, you're adding live music this year to the lineup. Wow.
Yep. And the other thing that makes me mental about Gen Con is you cannot find a place to sit down and play a game.
No.
There essentially is no open gaming. And that's nuts, man. So we have... to say we have unlimited open gaming space might be, you know, that might be hyperbole, but it's not far. I mean, we have a ton. And that's the other thing from the shared. And, you know, we were short on space, so we had some open gaming space, and actually quite a bit compared to most conventions. But this year, we're going to have just a massive several places that have open gaming. And, in fact, the hotel that's attached to the Alliant Energy Center, the Clarion, for those people that are, you know, going to be staying overnight, there are two boardrooms in there that'll have 24-hour open gaming. So, you know, there's just no reason that you can never find it. You'll always be able to find a place to play and other people to play with at GameholeCon this year.
Right. That is a majorly accurate Gen Con note. I've been there many, many times, and you're right. There's just no place to set up a game or to kind of pass by people and see if they want to game. I mean, because, you know, if you're just at a table then and they have a game out, you could come over and talk to them. But we all have this social anxiety, just wanting to ask people, hey, do you want a game? And it's just everybody's lined up in those hallways in the convention center, just sitting against the wall, right?
Yeah.
The stuff they bought out in front of them, but no place to play it. And, the open gaming at Game Hokkaido had last year, I played some games.
Yeah, I don't mean to disparage any other convention. You know, I personally do not care for the Comic-Con model of convention. And that is, you know, you pay a premium for a badge, which is fine. You have to pay, you know, things have cost. I certainly get that. But then the entire experience is standing in line, you know, queuing up the entire time for 6 seconds with someone you want to speak to and then move on. Great. I mean, I understand that if you have an idol that you want to go get a picture signed by, that's fantastic. But we are the anti of that. I mean, we're just not going to have, we're going to do everything we can to not have that happen. So that's why having just oodles of open gaming space is just one step to ensuring that that doesn't happen, that people have places to go and things to do. We also have a big dedicated whiteboard that if you do want to run a game and you're looking for players, you just go up there and write your game, looking for this, I want to run this game at this time and looking for these players, you can find me at blank. And that's just a community thing that worked out really well. People were using that thing all weekend last year. And because, you know, you can't go, if you're a single player and you're looking for a game, you can't go table to table. What are you guys playing? You know, there's gotta be some organization to it. So that worked out really well.
Yeah, that was very cool. And that is something about GameholeCon. There isn't, it's not filled with, not that there's anything wrong with cosplayers and LARPers and steampunk meetups, but it's not filled with that, where Gen Con is kind of a parade of you know, costumes and things, lots of anime movies, and just, you get overwhelmed. You kind of feel like, oh, maybe I don't know anything about being a geek or...
Yeah, you know, and you and I both know that's not true. It's just a different species of nerd, you know? So and that's great. I mean, we have some of that, but not a ton of it. I mean, Gen Con has a big, you know, fan con element to it, which you're describing. And that's cool. And it's a lot of fun. And certainly is neat to see everyone dressed up and doing their thing. But, you know, our convention is and always will be a tabletop gaming convention. That's what we do. And everything that sort of happens in the periphery is great. And we have some LARPing, but it's not a big part of our convention. I mean, this is tabletop gaming. RPGs, minis, board games, and cards. That's what we do, and that's what our convention's always going to be about. And, you know, and to that end, for example, I feel like I'm really disparaging Gen Con, but, you know, they have a games library there, the Gen Con games library, and it's run by someone we know, and he does a great job, but it costs money to get into that at Gen Con. He comes to our convention, sets up the exact same library, and it's free to all of our attendees. So there's a dedicated hall, and this year it's going to be really big. So in addition to the open gaming space, you can come and check out a game from the Gen Con games library for free and sit down and play it to your heart's content and return it at the end. You know, so we're trying to again, trying to put the convention together that we would love to come to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that games library is a big point, because I do play, or I used to play in the games library at Gen Con, and sometimes you'll check out a game and it will be something that turns out you don't want to play at all. Like, the rules are just so, you know, esoteric, but you paid to kind of play that game. And so you end up, you know, putting it back, where if you could just check out a game, try it out, and then okay, this one isn't for us, you know, we want something like Red Dragon Inn, not, you know, World of Warcraft, then, you know, you could do that more easily.
Sure. Sure.
And about the unique feel of your convention, you also have roller derby girls roller skating around the convention these last 2 years. So how did you guys get involved with the Mad Rolling Dolls? I assume that's the Mad Rolling Dolls. Yeah, it's got it, right?
You are. You're absolutely correct. That's who it is. Gosh, how did that start? I think, you know, simply it was one of the guys knew one of the organizers and just started talking about cross promotional stuff,
mm-hmm.
and just casually, and they're, you know, not surprisingly, a lot of those gals are nerds as well and geeks, yeah. and they thought it'd be cool, so they basically volunteered, come on over can we come over and just roll around? I said, of course, that'd be great. So it gives them a chance to promote their interest, and it's fun. It just again, there are conventions. You've been to a lot of conventions, and I know a lot of your listeners have too. And each convention has a different sort of style and mood, and there's no right answer for what that should be. Ours is more of an upbeat, high energy, kind of zany convention. You know, there's still very serious gaming and, you know, all that, no doubt. But we like stuff that's a little nutty. So this year, for example, the Mad Rolling Dolls are going to be rolling around the convention, and they're going to be giving out rubber bracelets to anyone they see who they think is gaming harder, because that's our motto, is game harder, exclamation point. So if they see someone that's gaming hard, you know, getting into it, having fun, you know, that person's going to be rewarded with a sort of a, you know, the Lance Armstrong style rubber bracelet,
right.
You know, so why? I don't know. Why not?
Because yeah.
kind of fun. That's why.
Yeah. Just a icon of the convention.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
yeah, just,
that's pretty awesome. So what kind of, you said you had live music that's going to be playing. Is that going to be going on the whole time? Or is it like an evening? There's going to be rooms of that.
It's going to be in the main lobby. There's a stage set up, and it's not going to be constant. It'll be in the late afternoons and evenings mostly. But mm-hmm. I mean, we've got everything from Dan the Bard,
of
know,
course,
who is, you know,
fantastic,
classic, to yeah. you know, Lords of the Trident, heavy metal.
Oh wow!
So it's, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting. We have a wide variety. Let's put it that way, and. You know, I'm sure we'll get, I'm sure, you know, basically anyone who wants to, who contacts us, mm-hmm. who wants to play, and if they're, you know, actually serious about it and they really want to do it, we'll slot them in and let them have a rip at it, because, there'll be a lot of people there, and you know what the heck, it's fun to play and get in front of people. So if, you know, so that's, you know, we have quite a, they're listed on our site so far, who we have, but we undoubtedly will add a few more as we get closer.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's still a lot of time. I mean, it probably doesn't seem like it to you, but there's still a lot of time before November for people to submit games and do that sort of stuff. So I know you go to Gary Con in March, mm-hmm. And North Texas RPG Con. Is there anything you go to those cons to look for, to try to emulate at Gamehole Con, or any lessons you learned from like Gary Con or anything like that?
Yeah, I guess, you know, before we got started with our convention, of course, you know, we pulled heavily from, Gen Con. I like, and the guys like their structure as far as how their, system goes with their website. It doesn't work always perfectly, but it's what they're trying to accomplish, with a, you know, event submission date, game registration date, you know, badge purchase date. That's how we basically emulated that. Then, you know, when it comes to Gary Con's like a family reunion. Yeah. It's got a very sort of homey feel. It's more more casual. It's not very structured. It's more of a reunion kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's great. North Texas RPG, for example, that's a great con too, but very different. They cap their attendance at 300 people. So that is a tremendous con for the RPG purists who want to go and sit in a room where there's only one game going, and you just play this game, and it's just that game, and then you go and, I mean, there's almost no atmosphere or energy, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It just is very much a go play your game, go have a sandwich, go play your next game. There is no dealer hall or anything like that. They have dealers sort of some exhibitors sort of spread out throughout the hotel. There are elements, for instance, like the customer service at North Texas is tremendous because there are 300 people and they really take care of everyone. And that's, you know, we looked at that and said, we want to deliver that kind of experience too, that everyone's important and that everyone, you know, anyone who has an issue will sort it out for them and, you know, make sure that, you know, when they show up, that they have a packet that has their badge, that has their game tickets, that has their schedule, and explains exactly where their games are. And when they show up, that game happens, the game master shows up on time, the game goes off, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, have we pilfered? We all steal from each other. We all joke about it. I'm friends with all the guys who run these conventions. We all enjoy going to each other's cons and seeing what we're doing and, you know, emulating. We're all growing together. We're all seeing someone comes up with a good idea. And, you know, of course, imitation is the highest form of flattery, so they say, and, you know, we see that. You know, I was just joking with Luke Gygax the other day about this. Now, we started a couple years ago with our badges, our lanyards, that the neck wallet, you know, the bigger sort of thing.
Where you keep all your now tickets and pencils. And
now it's basically an arms race that's going on between these conventions as to who can have the bigger, heavier neck wallet. You know, it's so, so silly. It's funny. And in fact, we're going to go probably back the other way because I think they're fine, but they get to be heavy and kind of annoying after a whole weekend of wearing one. But that's a, you know, another subject. But the other conventions definitely have had a big influence on what we do. And I think to some extent we're influencing them back. You know, they see what we're doing and they want to do similar things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that neck wallet that's a pretty funny reference because you used to get them where it was just a little plastic sleeve and you'd stick your tickets in the back and you'd make do. And then they started having fold ones. And then I think I saw a trifold neck wallet, like a full-size wallet hanging from the neck with, like, pencil spots and zippers. It does get overwhelming.
And the other, you know, the other big one is, you know, from other conventions, is you meet other gaming dignitaries, celebrities, and you say, hey, man, do you want to come to GameholeCon there?
Sure.
And, you know, so we have, you know, a lot of our attendees, our guests, you know, I met at other conventions. And quite frankly, it's starting to happen the other way where I get, you know, calls from these other friends who run these other conventions. Hey, can you, you know, get me Alan Hammack's contact information? I just had a conversation with Luke Gygax. How'd you get Jen Page to come? You know, mm-hmm. and so on. So we're sort of known. We have a couple things we're known for other than our zaniness are just the really big over the top guest list. You know, we've done that again this year. I just look at it and think, God, what are we? We must be out of our minds to have this many people in hotel rooms and flying in and stuff like that. But, you know, that's just what we do. And we love it because we think it's fun. And we love hanging out with these people. I mean, it's cool that a guy like Chris Perkins, who really goes to very few conventions, basically comes to ours every year. He's a permanent guest.
Yeah. He's just walking around, giving seminars, talking to people.
It's awesome. And you mentioned the Dungeon Bastard, mm-hmm. you know, Bill Cavalier. He's a permanent guest. This year he's coming with his wife, Lindsay, which is outstanding. You know, folks like that. Ed Greenwood is now a permanent guest. You know, it's awesome. And so our guest list continues to grow. And I'm just looking at it now. I have it in front of me. I just can't even – I'm just – gosh, we're now over 30. It's insane. But that's great, and that's awesome. And the other the difference also, as opposed to a Comic-Con kind of model, our guests are not allowed, and I make this very clear to all our guests, you're not allowed to come to our convention, run your game, and then go hide in your hotel room. You will be on the convention, at the convention, mingling, hanging out. And, you know, it's not like they all get it. It's not like, oh, boy, I don't really want to do – of course they want to do that. But let's put it this way. We strongly encourage them to be part of the overall experience. So, you know, if you wanted to grab Chris Perkins and for a minute and run into him in the hall and you want to ask him a question about, you know, the new edition of D&D and how did this come to be, he'll talk to you and tell you about it. And it's awesome. And that's all we want to do. I mean, we love games. We love the people who design them, and we want to interact with them and learn how they do what they do.
Yeah, and that is very noticeable at GameholeCon. And at the first GameholeCon, I saw that happening. In fact, I couldn't believe it because I'd only really gone to Gen Con before that for many years, right, with a giant gaming convention. And any celebrities were far at the end of a line I wasn't going to wait in, probably.
Yeah.
But then I go to GameholeCon, and there's Frank Mensah just kind of walking by. And, it, you know, it took me like a day to get over my terror of talking to these guys. But then they were like super nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just see Ernie walking around, and yeah, that it is amazing to just game with these guys because they just want to game too, really.
Yeah, absolutely. They're all gamers. Exactly right. They are just like us, except for they have decided to dedicate their lives to this thing, and they did so long ago, and they happen to be talented enough designers to do that. I mean, I'm looking forward to just hanging out with Steve Jackson this year. I mean, the guy's an icon in the gaming world. So I just want to hear, you know, I don't need his bio, but just to kind of hang out with him and sort of feel what kind of guy he is. I'm just very interested to see what he's like. You know, that's going to be real fun for us. He's coming this year for the first time. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Wow. That's awesome. Steve Jackson, even. That's just.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big deal, man. I mean, that's another one where, you know, what happened there, I don't mean to kill all your time here with these side stories.
No.
But, you know, I was having dinner with a couple of the Game Hole guys and Ed Greenwood, and we're hanging out, and you know, we're saying, gosh, it's awesome that you're here, thanks. And he was saying how much he loved the convention, how he wants to come back every year, and then he offered, look, if there's anyone that you want to have as a guest, anyone that you can think of that you'd like to have a guest, I will be happy on your behalf to reach out to them and invite them for you. So I mean, geez, that's unbelievable. You've got Ed Greenwood reaching out to people saying, hey, come to this convention because I think it's awesome. I mean, so let's put it this way. It's made it a lot easier to get, it's not just some guy no one's ever heard of pinging him on Facebook or, you know, a random email. It's a little different process now, which is really cool.
Right. Probably having, you know, the High Lord of the Harpers reach out to people is, smooths things over, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
All right, Alex. Well, we're at the point in the show where I want to do the quiz blast with you.
Okay.
The Vorpal Chainsword quiz blast. It's a, series of seven questions. You just answer them as best you can. Most of them are your opinion, but there are right answers just because. So,
okay.
Are you ready?
I am.
All right. Question number one. Out of the following two choices, which is your preferred version of D&D? Second edition AD&D using the Skills and Power Supplement, Complete Book of Elves, Complete Book of Humanoids, but not the Complete Book of Gnomes and Halflings, or choice two, fourth edition D&D and whatever ridiculous supplements that entailed.
Oh, that is a very easy question. I'm glad that you started off with a real softball like that.
You're welcome.
2E is it will always be my favorite edition. I love 5th edition, the current edition. That's what we play now in the game hall. But man, 2nd edition was so great because it – and I love AD&D, so all my, you know, Grognard friends, easy. You know, I have the OD&D boxes, and I played a ton of, you know, AD&D 1st edition. But 2nd edition, to me – took out some of the wonkiness and codified things in a much more sensible way. I could, you know, you could, for instance, for we still call them clerics, despite they want us to call them priests for a while there. Mm-hmm. You could figure out where those spells came from with respect to a given deity.
Oh yeah, major and minor spheres. It was awesome.
Yep. It made sense. There was a continuity throughout the whole system. Yet it was basically AD&D mechanics. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's an easy one. Fourth edition. You know, I bought the books. I looked at it. I played a little bit. It just wasn't for me. You know, the effort that Wizards has been up front about that it was the effort to sort of make a D&D be play like a video game. That's just not the experience I was looking for. So I didn't really play it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a softball. I knew the answer to that question. It's the same one I have too. All right. Question number two. Now they're going to get harder.
All right.
Which of the following monsters makes for a better end boss for first level adventurers? A bandit chieftain, B, an ogre berserker with a great club, or C, a large pool of green slime you just drop them into?
Well, you know, those are great. That's a real good array of choices because that depends on your goals as a DM. Mm-hmm. Do you want to have a soft first level adventure that your players can kind of cut their teeth on and get some experience and, you know, basically move them on to second level. Do you want them to have a real challenge at the end of this, while in first level, or do you want them just dead? So that, I guess it depends. And for me, I would take the ogre, because that's a really tough monster. It's a staple in, the Caves of Chaos. That's a great, yep. That's a great piece for first level characters to come across. And that's a really tough fight. And it really requires the players to play cooperatively and play tactfully, or they will die, but they have a very good chance to survive. Whereas, you know, the human chieftain, they should be able to handle that. And the green slime, you know, gosh, you do the thing, you know, like they wade into some water and all of a sudden they're surrounded by green slime. The end, you know, there's not a lot they can do.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, is what I'm trying to do. And I'm always trying to create danger, but survivable danger, like take them to the cusp, but they get through it and they say, that was pretty awesome. I mean, that's what I want to accomplish as a DM.
Right. So the Ogre Berserker with the Great Club is the right answer.
Oh, wow. Good for me.
Yeah, yeah. Because the Bandit Chieftain wasn't a human. It was actually an illithid with a vampire template. So it would have just wiped the party out.
Oh, man.
I should have mentioned that, I guess.
I didn't know it was that kind of quiz. Wow, that's sneaky.
Hidden answers. All right. Question number three. You are trapped on a volcanic desert island with only one board game. Which one do you bring? Side note, your only available opponent is Gary Busey, who lives on a cave on the other side of the island.
Oh, boy. What kind of game would engage Gary Busey long enough so you can actually get through it? Man, I mean, board game. I'm thinking kind of stuff I play with my kids. Gosh, I don't even know if you could get through a game of Dungeon. You know, so if you said, okay, you have a reasonable person to play with, I would go with something like Lords of Waterdeep or something like that.
Sure,
but the Buse, how would you keep him going?
He lives on the other side of the island. So if you, so your option is to just not play with him at all.
That's true, I guess. I don't know, maybe just because you said Island, Forbidden Island is a game that is, you know, pretty fast. I think it'd have to be something that's short.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you know, if he sees a seagull, off he goes. so yeah, I, for lack of a better answer, I would go with Forbidden Island. So that's because that just sprung to my brain.
That's a good one. I was going to, Forbidden Island is a good game. And I think he would play that at least once with you. yeah, other options were Arkham Horror, because you finally have time to set it up.
Oh, right.
Flying Frog Productions, Fortune and Glory, because that's good both solo and with someone else.
Oh, good point.
And then just Milton Bradley's Fireball Island from 1986, because you're on a volcanic island. But
sure.
Forbidden Island, I'm going to count that as correct.
That's a good game.
Yeah, okay. Question number four. A time-traveling Frank Frazetta approaches you and offers to paint a portrait of you in one of his famous styles. Which kind of scene do you choose for your own portrait? A triumphant barbarian pose with broadsword held high, damsel clutching to your side, and an exploding volcano in the background. Or B, an action carnage scene of you chopping through hordes of goblin men with a battle axe while on horseback.
Yeah, I would go with B, because that more mimics the sort of art that we do for GameholeCon.
Yes, it does.
and so it's just the straight up, you know, kind of kick-ass fun imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And also B would be much less likely to get me in trouble with my wife.
Yeah, sure. That's true. That's a good choice, but the answer was A, because of the exploding volcano. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's true. Fire always does win.
Yeah, it's right in the background.
Rookie mistake.
All right. Based on its current growth from year to year, what do you estimate will be the attendance numbers at GameholeCon in 2017?
Ooh, okay. Let's 2017. All right. So we're 15. Geez, that is really would take Delphic powers. But I would, if we all, everything's going like it is, and we all want it to keep growing like it is, meaning all the guys in the game hall, everyone wants to continue working at the same sort of pace that we are now. I would expect, and also looking at sort of the trajectory of growth from 13 to 14 now to this year, I would think that we'd probably be north of 2,000 attendees.
Wow.
I think that's reasonable. And that's not, you know, hitting out of the park. It could be more than that, quite frankly. But I think that's probably where, you know, That'd be a really nice number then, because you can really, you're still, it's still a small-ish, I mean, it's not small, but it's still a friendly size, but you can do all kinds of stuff with a number like that. I mean, you can support just about any kind of game, and that would be really cool.
Right. That is a very good, that is a reasoned and good answer. Unfortunately, the math was non-Euclidean, so it is 100 million people. So I hope you have enough cups prepared. But 2000, that's what it'd be if it was a linear style. So
Sure.
okay. Question number six. You are leading an expedition of adventurers toward fame, fortune, and glory. To which of the following places do you lead the expedition? A to Undermountain, B to the Demon Web Pits, or C to the Barrier Peaks.
Oh boy, those are some awesome options. I'll do it by process of elimination. I'm going to eliminate Barrier Peaks right away.
Oh.
Not that it's not iconic and, cool and all that. I'm just not a laser beam kind of guy when it comes to fantasy, my fantasy settings.
Sure,
You know,
sure.
I don't even like firearms. You know, I'm a purist when it comes to that. So now we're down to Demon Web Pips and Undermountain. Both, geez. Although the Demon Web Pits are really, quite frankly, scary. Really scary if you think about it. Undermountain is scary too, but I mean the Demon Web Pits.
Yeah.
So I guess being, a rational adventurer, and also being, again, a big Tui guy and a big Forgotten Realms guy. That's really my setting. That's my rule set. I would want to go to Undermountain and, pop up to Waterdeep to have a beverage, go back down, and to kick it around down there. I think that'd be an awesome place to adventure.
Yes, Undermountain is definitely the right answer. Because if you're going to lead
Yay.
people, you want to have some ales before you go down. Then if you actually make it up out of that giant hole in the bottom of the well, have a few more ales and watch other people attempt to make it through. So,
That's right.
yeah,
Good.
Undermountain for sure. I do like flying saucers in my D&D, but Undermountain has a special place in all our hearts, I think. There's a small convention I go to every year where it's just a constant Undermountain game.
Oh.
Yeah, where every year we just more Undermountain because there's always new characters. So.
Well, and that, for we have Steve Shen coming this year, who is, he's about the biggest author of all the Undermountain stuff, and who did most of that writing. So make sure you run him down. He's a hell of a nice guy, and chat him up a little bit. He'll tell you all about that stuff. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. That's great news. See, there's so many people going to GameboyCon this year. This is
Yeah.
the last question. You are being hunted by the devil himself, who is wielding a legendary greatsword stolen from the Cathedral of the Glorious Order of Ronnie James Dio. The sword is known as the Holy Diver. You come to a dead end and know that the devil is just behind you. Suddenly, in a flash of light and clash of symbols, the demigod Neil Peart appears before you on his flaming motorcycle. He solemnly hands you the blessed weapon of Rush to assist you in your battle. What is the glowing sword's name?
Ooh, did you know that I'm a gigantic Rush fan? I'm
I
gonna have
did
to
know
think.
that, and I am
Okay.
also a gigantic Rush fan.
Okay, good. That would be unbelievably good fortune for me to get a question about Rush. Gosh.
I told Vince DiCola that his choice of favorite Rush album in the last podcast was actually wrong, which was hard to do because it's Vince DiCola.
That's fun. Oh gosh. So it's the devil.
You're fighting the devil who's wielding the Holy Diver.
I would go, to me, this sounds like Bitor and the Snow Dog, so I'm going to call it Snow Dog, because Snow Dog was victorious over Bitor, who was in effect the devil in that song. That's my answer. Snow Dog.
That is a solid answer, and I'm going to accept it because that is a good song and it applies. I would also have accepted Xanadu, Nocturne, or even YYZ. Even though it's not a great name, it's still an awesome song.
Sure, it's an
And it's
airport
Neil
code.
Peart handing it, so
Yeah. Okay, awesome.
Awesome. So that is the end of the quiz blast, and you got 5 out of 7 right, and only because I tricked you on two of
And you were generous in some of your accepted answers, though, which I appreciate.
Thank you for taking the Vorpal Chainsword quiz blast, Alex.
Yeah, sure.
It was,
Fun.
yeah, it was. Is there anything you'd like to point out to listeners that they should check out, Kickstarters or web pages or anything you think should have more exposure, you'd like to mention?
Let me think about that. I'm a real Kickstarter problem.
I know,
I
me
don't even
too.
like to look at my open projects. It's ridiculous how many I get into. But I just backed one that is pretty interesting looking. I think it's called No Thanks Evil. It's by Monte Cook Games, and it's a I've got small kids, so I'm excited about it because it's a game that's designed for families to get kids into role-playing games, and I'm always trying to pick up good ones like that. I mean, so I'm excited about that, and it's really blown away its stretch goals. So that's pretty cool. I just got there's a new dice, like we all need more dice, right? But anyway, there's one that is has these cool shapes, like the D6 is shaped like a sword and the D12 is shaped like a helmet. They're all gosh, I'm trying to think of the sh they're all they all are polyhedrons of different shapes, but they work this art into them. They're pretty cool. So those are the Kickstarters that at least I've picked up in the last week. Yeah, so I think those are neat. And I will say this for everyone out there who is not seen Fury Road, go see it, man. What a great movie. Holy cow, is that fun. I mean, talk about exactly what you expect and what you hope that the new Mad Max movie would be like. What a tremendous show. So if any have any doubt that because he took some time off that it wasn't going to be awesome, untrue. It is fantastic.
Oh yeah, it Fury Road was an incredible movie and well worth owning when it comes out on Blu-ray for sure.
And as far as new games, the newest game that's got me turned on is Cthulhu Wars, the Sandy Peterson board game. It's got unbelievable miniatures. It's big. You talk about Arkham Horror. It's sort of that level of game where it really does take a little time to set up. It's not too bad, but not quite Arkham Horror like. But it's still is it's not necessarily a quick game, but it's really got a lot of crunch to it, but not too much. And it's fun. I really like it. And in fact, I think we're going to play it next week up here in the game hall, and I'm excited about that.
So Cthulhu, I saw the Kickstarter, but only after it closed. It looks like a huge game with a ton of miniatures. Now, are you planning on, no, I'm not even going to ask because it's just, are you planning on painting the miniatures? Like, why would I ask that? That's such a huge project.
They come in, green. I think it's green, red, blue, and black. I think, but they come with, the four armies have primary colors and they're quite bright. They're pretty cool as is. If they're all, sort of the pewter gray or the, Reaper bones white, then I may be tempted to paint them. But they're pretty cool as are, and so I don't think I'm gonna do anything with them.
And you probably need the differentiation of the colors anyway, since it is like a
Yeah, the
race.
rules you'd have to paint them all consistently because they're all armies. So yeah, I mean you could certainly paint them, but I mean, if you have extra time to paint, we all have other things that are probably worth our time than that, beyond that.
Right. I donated to the Shadows of Brimstone Kickstarter and painted all those miniatures, which took a good
Oh,
long time. And now the Kickstarter is saying, oh, we have more on the way. And I'm like almost dreading their arrival because now that you've painted some, you have to paint them all before you can play the game.
You're invested. Yeah, I've heard nothing but good about that game. I have yet to play it, so that's another one on the list for me.
Yeah, it's very Warhammer Quest, but Old West slash Cthulhu kind of Deadlands. It's very cool.
Yeah, cool.
Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, Alex. And I very much look forward to Gamehole Con this year.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for being a wonderful host. And this is a subject that I can talk endlessly about. I'm excited. Our dates this year are November 6th through 8th here in Madison, Wisconsin. For anyone out there who's interested, it's gameholecon.com is our site. It has all the information about the convention, where it is, and hotels, and all that kind of stuff. Badges go on sale, I believe it's June 27, if I'm remembering correctly, at noon Central Standard Time. And they'll remain on sale through about 2 to 3 weeks before the actual convention starts, so we can have time to print our badges and all that kind of stuff. Games, those of you out there who are interested in running a game, submit them now. Our first catalog of games is going to be revealed probably in mid-June, so we're a couple of weeks away from that. We have hundreds of games already. It's going to be, I mean, we have more games earlier than we've ever had, I guess, and that makes sense, but still, it's always nice to see. So I'm really looking forward to letting all you see just the tremendous variety of games that we have this year already. And then we'll be taking submissions all the way, you know, through October. So it'll, I don't even know what the end number is going to be. It's hard to even forecast it. But it'll be, it's going to be great for attendees. They'll just have what I would so love to be able to go and just attend this convention because the gaming options are unbelievable.
They really are. And if anybody's like on the fence about submitting a game to a convention, I can say that running a game at GameHulkCon is a super blast. Everyone's really friendly. And plus, you've got like, you know, David Zeb Cook walking by your table to give you pointers if you, you know, but yeah, it's an incredible convention to run a game at.
Yeah, I know you have, and I really appreciate the support from, you know, year one that you came out and hung out with us and you run games. And so that's very much appreciated. And that's what's cool, man. We have a real nice community who are into it, because this really is, you know, your convention as much as it's mine. I mean, we did it for everyone to have a place that, we, you know, to have the kind of convention that we all want, that the upper Midwest deserves. I mean, we used to have Gen Con and we don't have Gen Con anymore. So, you know, we're not trying to replace Gen Con, but we're trying to, you know, set up and create something that is ours and will always be ours. And so, you know, I appreciate all you've done to help us from the start.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a good time. And I'm glad it's here. And thank you for creating GameHulkCon.
Sure.
Well, you have a good weekend, Alex.
Yeah, and you too. Thanks again.